This is Radio City Talk.
Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Mark Whale is here. Let's have a look at one of the big stories of the day, and that's Everton's attempt to complete the signing of the Besiktas striker, Cenk Tosun. I hope it is Cenk. I've been calling him Cenk for 24 hours now. No one else has corrected
me. Have you ever...
Is he Cenk?
Well, I'm going to go... Cenk? I'm going to go with you, whatever you say at the moment. What's his surname?
Tosun.
Tosun sounds a little bit less capable of making a mistake. Who's the commentator? There's a commentator, and me and our Finn, whenever we're watching it and Everton are playing, he commentates on Everton and he can't say Jagielka. I mean,
does he say Jagielka?
He mixes it up. He says Jagielka, right? That's one. And then he says, there's another one, but Jagielka is the just like, I've not heard. I mean, Jagielka may be the wrong pronunciation, but pretty much 80, 90% of standard Jagielka pronunciation is Jagielka, as far as I'm aware, and Jagielka as well. And I'd like, where have you been? Where's this coming from? So this could be another problem for him.
All right.
He could be calling this one Cenk 1 minute and Cenk the next.
Be tossing. Tosun.
If he scores goals, right, we don't care.
In The Guardian today, it says a delegation from the club will meet... sorry, I'm looking at the name here. The Turkish club's president is... So the Besiktas president is called Fikret Orman. So a delegation from Everton are going to meet Mr. Orman in London following his return from a holiday in South Africa. Everton had hoped to complete the £25 million deal over the weekend with Steve Walsh travelling to Istanbul on Friday, only for Besiktas to increase the asking price by £2 million because of the rising cost of Tosun's potential replacement. Now, the biggest question here is, who is Cenk Tosun?
Give us some stats.
Is he worth £30 million? So I've been on his Wikipedia page, and this is what we can say about him so far. He started at Eintracht Frankfurt.
Is he a Turkish national?
Place of birth, Germany. Wetzlar in Germany. So he is 6 foot tall. He's a forward. He wears the number 23 at Besiktas. He started at Eintracht Frankfurt, where he made one appearance and scored no goals. He then moved on to a Turkish club whose name I can't pronounce for €400,000, and he scored 10 goals in 14 league matches. And then he moved to Besiktas. So they signed him on a five-year deal on the 4th of February 2014, and he chose the number 23 shirt after basketball player Michael Jordan. So in his first two campaigns at Besiktas, he was mainly a sub behind Demba Ba and Mario Gomez. And after they left, he was a regular in the last season, scoring 24 times as his club won the league. So he's a league winner.
And 24 goals in a season.
And he then turned down a move to Crystal Palace. But he wants to come to Everton.
Well, of course.
And have you heard of him before?
No. Okay. No, I'll be honest. Not since this...
Is it just numbers that matter at the moment?
In terms of goals?
Just in terms of
people
in the
coming into the squad. No, I think quality is more important. The numbers are there. Certainly, centre forward, you could have a point. We don't have numbers there. I read a few days ago that Allardyce may want two strikers, and I think that's welfare enough. I think it is a case of two strikers. This whoever comes in is going to take a bit of time to bed in. You're going to have periods of injury and out of form. You need replacements, you need options. So, this is that easily.
What about the way Everton play and the way that they attack with the football? Is it right or wrong, or are they going in the right direction in terms of...
Well, there is an argument or a case to put forward. Everton, at this moment anyway, and certainly this season, are certainly playing a style of football not in keeping with perhaps how the top teams are playing. You look at certainly Chelsea and City and Liverpool, for that matter, certainly, they do and they don't have a centre forward. Well, certainly Liverpool kind of don't when, the goals are getting
Liverpool
spread across.
Don't, do they?
No, well, this is it. So they play with, four attackers, basically. So do City, and Everton seems to play with one attacker. I can't really talk for the rest of the league, but
Chelsea play with maybe three attackers, don't they?
Well, yeah, and at times four. I mean, Marcos Alonso pushes right on. Yeah. Hazard drops it. At times, you've got Moses, Alonso, Hazard and Willian, and possibly sometimes another forward. But when they came to Everton, that was what they did.
So there you go. That's the same blueprint as Liverpool, isn't it?
Similar, very, very similar.
Arsenal
very similar.
Are very similar to that as well.
And Arsenal have done that for a long time. And we either could do that with the players we've got, and but we're not playing that way. We certainly, I mean, obviously the remit for Sam to come in is to tighten everything up and stop us getting beat, which did happen for a while. Now it's gone the other way. We've lost two on the bounce, so he's maybe going to focus even more on that. But you do need quality, though. I mean, the teams you just touched on. I mean, I was going to say, I can't talk for West Ham. I don't think, for West Brom, but I'm guessing that they're probably a little bit similar to Everton. They need to sort of move forward a little bit in how the game's being played. And look at tactically how they're going to set up and look how they're going to cause teams problems going forward. Because, you know, at the moment, when we are playing with a centre forward, which we are, we just seem to be sticking him on the back defender and hoping that he can keep hold of the ball when we play through to him, and there's no support for him. That's the biggest issue with it all. So it's
only the very best teams that can play like that, because they can stockpile a certain number of attacking players to achieve that.
Well, that's obviously part one of the equation. The second part is, if you are that type of coach and how you want to play the game, and that's what seems to be causing teams, you know, I mean, look at, we're talking about the top three, four teams in the league now, and that's how they're causing teams problems.
All play the same way.
By playing four forward players and keeping the team pressed high. That's how you press high. You talk about pressing high and winning the ball high. And, well, you've got to have players up there in order to do that. Otherwise, you've got one up front and your other nine is your other nine outfield players and your goalkeeper are just dropping deep. And that, to an extent, that can work. But you do have to ride your luck, and you do have to have good defending as well.
Right, let's have a look at some of the other stories as well in the papers today. So last night, and we just mentioned Manchester City, they beat Watford 3-1, and Raheem Sterling scored after 38 seconds. Now, what a season he's been having.
He's been on fire, which is great news for me, because I've got him in my fantasy football team. So, but you know, he has another early goal for City. I think they've done this on numerous occasions. Oh, just to touch on my point there as well, Man United are playing that kind of, they're not doing a great job of doing what I was saying, and they're playing with one forward.
They're not playing the way that the others in the top six are playing, are they?
No, exactly, and they're struggling with that. And yet, you know what? He's got players at his disposal to do that.
Right.
So Sterling's on fire.
Sterling last night.
He's earning me points.
Yeah. Man City are just
and De Bruyne, who were took out because he was injured, back in.
Devastated. Back in the team last night.
Back in the team.
And you took him out of your fantasy.
I took him out,
team.
I don't know, did he score or get an assist? I'm not even looking.
Elsewhere last night, Swansea 0, Tottenham 2, and I watched some of the game on Sky Sports, and they played on a proper quagmire.
I didn't watch the whole game. But
the ball didn't run true, did it?
I thought to myself, this could get called off, and it must have come close, but I think just at the very, very vital moment, the rain kind of abated, and it became not in danger anymore. But that pitch is ruined for the rest of the season.
Fernando Llorente scoring the first there. He didn't celebrate against his former side. Roy Hodgson, now mocked by all quarters, but actually is doing a terrific job for Crystal Palace. And I'm one of those who, you know, I was quite happy to lay the knife into him because I didn't enjoy his time at Liverpool Football Club. But look at what he's doing at Crystal Palace. So a 2-1 win away at Southampton. A late winner for them. They're out of the relegation zone. So 22 points. They're a couple of points clear of the relegation zone now.
Yeah.
And he seems to have had a remarkable effect, almost maybe the same sort of, now, Everton weren't as low, but that Sam Allardyce effect, he stabilised the ship, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And one thing about Roy Hodgson that we know is he's very organised. He was England manager, which, you know, you could argue and say he wasn't a successful England manager, but, you know, you don't become England manager without being completely competent at organising a football team and setting up a team. Which is arguably why Sam Allardyce got the job as well. So we know you find him at Crystal Palace. He did a great job at Fulham, a great job at West Brom. And yes, the personality of Roy, I don't think, fitted Liverpool. Certainly not at the time. And that was what it was. His personality in general, I think, as a football fan myself, you can look at it and think, well, it's not really, he doesn't enthuse me, and I don't really get much from him. But tell you what, he gets something out of the teams he manages, and they're doing well. It's still early days, still a long way to go, and it's going to be an interesting end to the season in terms of the battle to avoid the drop, because that's the only interest, I feel. I think the title's well and truly done.
Title's gone. Obviously, the next six places are interesting, but the bottom three at the moment, Stoke, West Brom, Swansea. West Brom losing to West Ham last night. Andy Carroll's first couple of goals of the season. 56,000. watching West Ham last night.
Well,
that's remarkable support, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that we've talked about this before. When new grounds become, you know, new ground, they tend to generate a bit of interest. I think a lot of clubs who've done that in the past, and certainly what you're sort of traditional. I think Middlesbrough, Ayrton Park was relatively small attendance. And when they moved to the Riverside, that went up. Similar with Derby, that may well be back down again. But, you know, fair play to the Hammers fans. They seem to be attending. Or are there more of these Premiership or Premier League football fan day trippers who want to watch Premier League football? And now they've got the space to accommodate them. And that's what's filling them. Because I know I've heard that off a lot of West Ham fans who do the phone-ins and they say there's no atmosphere and they're all day trippers. So, but 56,000 must have been a decent atmosphere and they've got the win. So
testament to some good support.
I think that's the worry for Stoke. I'm just looking at the teams down the bottom. Is you look at the teams that have changed their managers and there seems to be a bit of momentum. Swansea's was halted last night. They got a win at the weekend. Stoke, I think, are pretty much the only team now who haven't changed their manager. And they are really lacking confidence, and there's just no momentum there. And West Ham are picking up a bit of momentum. You've touched on Palace. You know, are Swansea about to do the same? And I think Stoke would be very surprised to see Mark Hughes survive.
Quickly on one of the other major sports stories making headlines today, and that's Andy Murray. So in the world of tennis and Australian Open coming up very shortly, and he's spoken yesterday about how his hip injury has proved so problematic for him over the last 12 months. So he returned, of course, from back surgery to win a third Grand Slam in 2016 and a second Olympic gold medal, and since then it seems to have suffered. Well, his injury problems seem to have got worse and worse, and it seems like his hip might keep him out of some of the major tournament action this year, which is a real shame, isn't it? But
I feel for him, really. You know, when you're seeing a sportsman, reading between the lines, I think this is not going to go away. This is not just a temporary one. It's not. Yeah, but we've seen Nadal come back. I don't know what age he is now, and I don't know what age he was when he spent time out. But I think, I don't know whether sometimes, it's a bad turn of phrase, but maybe half measures that he's used in trying to get this injury under, instead of just saying possibly, right, I need a complete year off and get it fixed completely properly, he's maybe approached it in a way where he could say, right, we'll have some time off to get back for a certain date. And obviously that's not worked, and I think he needs to go back to the drawing board and get it done completely. He's got a lot of time on his side. He's 30. He's strong, athletic, and he looks after himself. He could easily come back after a year out.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.